This is The God Show, a conversation about the human spirit with your host, Pat McMahon.
You know, when it comes to a subject like the one we're talking about today on The God Show, I have mixed feelings because this is such a celebratory time. I don't care where you are listening, in what city, in what country, The God Show is coming to you because we answer a whole lot of questions about just simply the fundamental spirituality of humankind. And most of the time it is something to celebrate. But most particularly also during the holidays. Well, wait a minute, hold it. Are you saying that's the way it's supposed to be? But that isn't the way you feel? Because everybody constantly tells you that you have to be joyful and happy and have a good time and share all the wonders of Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's with the family, the people at the office, everybody around you, smiling, singing those songs. But they aren't taking into consideration the fact you just lost somebody. Yeah, that happens at Christmas too, doesn't it? D-Unks. D-Unks knows all about that. She's a bereavement counselor for Hospice of the Valley here in central Arizona. And D, as a bereavement counselor, I think that probably a whole bunch of folks said instantly, oh my God, that's something I wouldn't want to do. How sad is it?
Well, it's not sad for me.
That's what I mean.
Because I feel real blessed that I can come into people's lives when they're in a lot of discomfort and distress and be with them, be present with them as they go through their grief journey.
But grieving during the holidays, I mean, grieving during August is tough.
Mm-hmm.
But grieving during the holidays just seems to be something that is so antithetical that it would be almost impossible for somebody who has just lost somebody to be able to appreciate any of the wonderful stories that were told.
And I hear that too, Pat, many, many times. When someone is recently in grief, which I call newly bereaved, they don't even want to experience the holiday at all. They want to completely avoid it. They want to go to sleep and wake up when it's all over, when the season is completely over, because there's so many reminders of their loved one that this just brings unbearable pain because they miss them so much and it's been so recent. So when I'm with people like that, I say, you can only do what you can do. It's okay to not participate fully in this season and not to feel that happiness and joy and festivity that other people do.
But do people let you drop out?
Well, unfortunately, many times we feel pressured by family and friends to say, oh, come on, let's go. You know, you can. It's good for you. You know, you'll feel better. And one of the things I counsel people is that it's, you know, sometimes we want to take care of other people that don't really understand what we're going through internally. So it's okay to say, you know, this isn't the right time for me, or this isn't good. Or sometimes I give them strategies on how they can kind of participate gradually or for a little while and then get back to the safety and comfort of their homes.
It's almost as if you can't win, because I know situations in which, hypothetically, it's a woman who lost a husband. And she's trying her best to just manage to get through that swamp,
mm-hmm,
that is the demands of the holidays, not just the holidays itself, but the demands. And then when that woman has shown a modicum of joy, she's trying to get along as best she can, and she shows just a little bit of the holiday spirit, she's criticized by some other folks. Look at her. look at Martha. Has she no shame? She just lost Charlie, and there she is singing Christmas carols.
Isn't it sad, Pat, that people who are, you know, so tender and raw are getting these mixed messages, and they're not being understood or even encouraged to just be where they need to be in their grief? There's always people giving you advice. There's always people saying, oh, well, look at this. She's not crying. Oh, look at this woman. She's crying too much.
Mm.
You know, you hear the back and forth, and for many of my clients, it adds to their distress because they feel judged and they feel like they're being given advice about things that the people don't know anything about.
And look at what she's wearing.
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't she wearing black? That's what you're supposed to wear. And look at her. She's got all these colorful clothes on. She's not grieving. She doesn't even miss that guy.
Well, and the thing is, people don't even understand that during the holidays, it takes a lot of energy. And people in grief, one of the biggest symptoms of grief is fatigue. You don't have the energy. So even getting yourself up and dressed in the morning and out the door is a big effort.
Oh, you know what? If I could hear the audience playing back their feelings and what they're saying right now, you could imagine thousands of people saying, yes, she gets it. She understands what I'm talking about. And finding somebody that understands is one of the toughest things of all, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And sometimes we are disappointed by people that we thought would be more understanding, like close family members or friends. And they're not either responding at all, or they're responding inappropriately. That's not helping us, and that adds to our disappointment.
And then there's the magic phrases. Well, in a little while, you'll get over it.
Mm-hmm.
And just give it time. And get involved with something else. Learn to ski. People mean well, but those are so odious.
You're right. And they're not helpful. And the message that the griever takes from that is, we're not comfortable with you the way you are now. We want you to change and get back to your old self. And they don't feel like their old self, and they're not going to be their old self completely. Because grief changes us. It changes us. And so we're not exactly the self we were before this happened.
In the 19 years we've been doing the God Show on the air, we've addressed grief,
mm-hmm,
and grief counseling. But since we're concentrating on the holidays right now, I want to know this, and I don't know that I've ever asked anybody this. Is it possible for any human being to experience grief and joy simultaneously?
Yes, because grief and joy are the two sides of the same coin. So even though people are grieving, they can still have what I call, one of my clients called, splashes of joy that will all of a sudden bring them in the present moment, and they find that happiness. And that doesn't mean their grief has gone away. And some people misunderstand that, and they think, oh, she's really doing good. She's getting over it, because they see a splash of joy. And even the bereaved may feel guilty. Like, oh, man, I really enjoyed this meal, or, oh, I enjoyed the company for this last hour. I'm not so lonely. And then later they'll say, how could I have enjoyed that without Fred or Mary?
You just can't win.
It's very difficult.
Well, tell us how to win.
Well, I think one of the things that my colleagues and I emphasize to our loving bereaved is you need to go with the flow and not force anything, like happiness or festivities, and yet be present with yourself to accept whatever you're experiencing, whether it's sadness or fear or even anger, that these things come and go like a wave. These emotions will come and go. And there's other things that we may be experiencing, like we're very tender-hearted and emotionally fragile. So sometimes people will say something that they think is very innocent, and yet we don't take it right.
Like so, what?
Well, like, gee, maybe you should wear this outfit today, or well, that would be kind of nice on you. Or maybe, you know, you wanted to buy this new lamp. Why don't you just make a decision, you know, just buy something. Don't, you know, and if you change your mind, but they're not understanding that indecisiveness is a real big part of it.
Say that again.
Indecisiveness is a big part of grieving.
Yeah, because there are people right now who are saying, I didn't know that that happened to other people, too. I thought that was just me wallowing around in my misery.
Well, that's why what we suggest is, if you're getting an invitation, like one of my clients told me last week, she's already gotten an invitation for New Year's. Now, her husband just passed away a couple of months ago, and she's barely getting through every day. So what we talked about, how hard it is to know how you're going to feel it by New Year's. So what I suggested was, ask your friend, can I wait till the last minute? I may change my mind 10 times before New Year's. And if, you know, if it's okay with your friend and they're a good friend, they'll say, don't worry about it. Even if you call me the day of or you just show up, we'd love to have you. And that takes the pressure off the person.
Is the first Christmas, you've been doing this a long time,
mm-hmm.
bereavement counseling, is the first Christmas always the hardest?
Depends on when the death occurs. If it's recent, you're usually numb through the first Christmas. So you're just not really feeling very much. And then the second Christmas seems more difficult because now the reality of the death is really there and you're fully in present with it. So in answer to your question, no, not always. The first Christmas, you might just kind of coast through it in a numb state, and then the second Christmas gets you.
Boom. Whiplash.
Mm-hmm.
If friends mean well, I think really, for the most part, I think they really mean well, that they intend to say and do the right thing. But boy, do they blow it. So many times they just choose the wrong phrase or the wrong focus or the wrong direction. I'm just thinking about the fact that there are people who are trying to be friendly and then thinking that they're going to encourage you. They'll say, well, you just aren't trying. you aren't trying. How long are you going to let this affect you? Because in my family, it was 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went on with our lives. You just aren't trying. What do you say?
Well, this comes up very often, and it's based upon the other person's experience. We all have an experience with grief, and depending on our personalities, the circumstances of the death, the nature of the relationship, we grieve differently. So sometimes people make the mistake to say, well, this is how I experienced it, and I'm sure this is how you're going to experience it.
Mm.
Instead of saying, you know what, you're grieving your own way. Tell me what's going on with you. Help me to understand what you're experiencing.
Is that a good idea to request that the person talks to you?
Yes. Oftentimes people want to talk about it, but they're not sure. They don't want to be a downer, and they're not sure how people are going to experience it. So I encourage bereaved people to say, you know, bring up the topic. If nobody is mentioning your loved one's name or avoiding the topic, bring it up. And sometimes as people experience it that we care about, one of the things we can do to help them is say, you know, Pat, I remember your dad. He was such a great guy, and I'm wondering, this holiday season, how are you getting through it? Do you want to talk about it?
Mm.
And that gives you an opening. If you don't, you can say, no, I'm really not ready right now, but thanks for remembering my dad.
Boy, those are such subtle differences. I mean, it's like you're walking on ice. Both of you, the friend and the person who's grieving the loss.
I think it is a very difficult time. I mean, oftentimes we don't know what to say to someone who we care about that's had a death. And until we experience something very strong ourselves, we realize we've made mistakes too. So we have to just give grace, a lot of grace during this time.
Is there any phrase, question, request, thought that is always right? There are a lot of wrong things that you can say, and many times unintentionally we say them. But is there something that always works?
I think any expression of caring, like, you know, I've really missed seeing you at whatever event. I really care about you, and I'm here if you ever want to talk or laugh together or cry together. Just, I'm here for you.
Let me ask you about the differences in loss. If a family loses a grandparent at 96,
mm-hmm.
and that grandparent had what appears to be, at least to outsiders and the family, a really fabulous, rounded life, all kinds of experiences, all kinds of laughter, all kinds of love. Is that grief far less than the family who experiences the suicide of a relatively young person?
Well, we're talking about two completely different things.
Talk to us about the difference.
They're both very different, and they're hard for the families because the woman who had the loving relationship, they just want more of that. You never can have enough of the good stuff, so they're grieving that. And the people who lost their loved one through a tragedy, whether it's suicide or a car accident or something like that, they're feeling like, our relationship was cut short too soon. I want to still reconnect with that person, and I don't understand what happened and why I can't.
Is there more anger associated with that?
There's many more questions related to it that oftentimes go unanswered, like why did this happen to my loved one? And why? And also anger sometimes just at the unfairness of it. Oftentimes, as I do counsel people who have had an adult child die or a young child die, you know, our normal experience in life is that the elders will leave this earth before the young people do. So when someone dies before their parents or their grandparents do, very hard to accept that. It just goes against the expected order of things that it should go in life. So oftentimes people will say, the survivors will say, they had their whole life. I wish it, you know, I would have gladly taken that place and had it been me so they could continue to live.
It just seems that that's unanswerable.
It is.
A friend of mine and a friend of my producer, Rosemary, just recently lost a son in his 40s. Seemed on the surface to lead, if one was to describe it briefly, a kind of lonely life, employed, but still not a socially active person. One day he was here, and then the next day he was gone. Is that the same as a car accident? Because it was by his own hand, and those other kinds of accidents seem to happen, and you can say, but for the grace of God, I'm not there, but I would trade places with that person. But when it comes to suicide, there is such a sense of despair,
mm-hmm.
that the person in the automobile might not have had at all. They might have been thoroughly enjoying their lives. Seems to me like we're talking about two different kinds of loss.
Well, I think now you're talking about, you know, what we think is people enjoying their lives and being snatched away, having everything going for them. And everything looked great, and then someone who has really had some suffering, some emotional suffering.
Yes.
And it could be something that's done to them intentionally, like suicide, or it could be an accidental overdose, something like that. And those are much harder questions for parents and older loved ones and all of our friends to accept, because we just want to know if if we could have changed anything, could we have changed it? You know, you get through that feeling of despair, like you said, Pat, and you want to protest the outcome, so we review what we had done and said and kind of how we had been with that person, thinking, was there anything I missed? Could I have done anything to change that outcome? And that sense of feeling responsible is very overwhelming, and it really kind of complicates our grieving.
You're a person of faith, aren't you?
Yes.
That's the preface to my next question. Do you find that the families of suicides and the families of accident victims tend to often blame God?
I think, I'm not going to use the word often, I think it does happen. And when people, and I don't know if they blame them, but they're angry about it, and they'll even be angry at God if they have a faith system that believes in God.
Well, how could you let this happen?
Right.
I've been a good person.
My son or daughter were good people.
Right. We've contributed in every possible way. We've done solid moral things in the community. And how could you, this overseeing father of us all, let this happen?
Right. And I mean, I hear that more times than I can count.
What do you say to people who say that?
Well, the first thing I acknowledge is that they're angry, and they're angry at God too, and that's okay. You know, God's awesome and can take our anger and can accept that anger, so don't let anybody tell you not to be angry. But I think that hopefully through this process they're going to find some understanding and meaning that they help them continue with it. I don't believe that God punishes us and causes things to happen to punish us, but I think that we live in a very hard world, and there's all kinds of things that happen in this world that we have no control over. So part of it is them, the helping the families to just come to some kind of peace and acceptance, even if they don't fully have understanding. There are some things in this life, this physical realm, we're not going to fully understand.
We're talking with Dee Unks. That's DeeUnks, child of the Quad Cities, Midwestern America. And she's a bereavement counselor here at Hospice of the Valley. Wonderful organization. Tell me your experience. Is the most difficult thing for a family, and we're going to have to take general families now.
Okay.
The most difficult thing to handle, losing a mom, a dad, or a child?
Well, of course, it's going to depend on the relationship. My experience is that a child death is very, very difficult. Because you're never expecting, you bring a child into this world, you want to protect them, you want to preserve them, and you never expect, you never live your life, unless they're born with a disability, mm-hmm. that you're going to outlive them. But we have cases where there was a child that stayed home and lived with a parent. They never married, or they never really had other relationships. And to them, the parent was a very primary person in their lives. And in that case, that parent is their biggest loss. And then we have situations with a spouse. And a spouse death is very unique, because when we grow up and as children, we are growing up and maturing, and we're leaving our parents, we're differentiating from them, and we're connecting with someone else, and you're two individuals, and you unite your lives, and you spend lifetime, many times, just growing together and sharing a lot of intimate things that you've shared with no one else. And that person leaves us. Now you feel that part of you is gone. So a spouse of many years, or even shorter years, is, depending on the connection, is very, very difficult too. So I guess I can't pick one over any of the other ones, Pat. It's all hard.
Right. And you as a bereavement counselor, though, you're really speaking also for the people who are personally experienced of this in the family. You can't pick one as being a greater loss.
Right.
Okay. Go along with me on this now. Okay.
Okay.
We're going to be kind of scene playing, but I don't want you to act. I just want you to be de-unks, having heard this probably many, many times.
Okay.
Dee, I came to you because, as you know, I lost my spouse about 7 or 8 months ago. And I'm very, very active at my office in attempting to participate in business things and sometimes social things in the office. And there's someone that works down the hall that's been very, very nice to me, very thoughtful, very considerate, and I'm beginning to find myself attracted to that person. But I'm afraid that everybody's going to think less of me because it's been only 7 months. What's the appropriate time to pass by in losing a spouse like I lost mine before I can begin to be social again?
Well, a couple of things I want to ask you, Pat. How long was your wife ill?
My wife was ill for a matter of months, but only a few months.
Okay. And how long were you together?
20 years.
20 years. And so your question is you're feeling that, you know, attraction to someone else, and you're worried about what other people are going to say?
Well, yes, because
like
I don't want friends and family. I've mentioned this person at the office to a couple of people in the family, and they immediately said, well, now don't start thinking about having a relationship. I mean, for crying out loud, you've only been single now for a few months. Give it a year anyway.
Well, you know, the standard response that would be a year, that because in the first year, Pat, you know, you're up and down emotionally still, and even though you're focused on your work and you're re-engaged in life, you're still what I call emotionally vulnerable. So oftentimes we're seeking comfort of others or familiarity with people, and that feels good. It feels good to be with someone that understands, you can feel comfortable with. And I think that that's not a bad thing. And a lot of people will say, but be careful, don't go too fast. And that's what I would say too. I would say, if you want to get together for coffee or friendships, but just pace yourself, because you still are very emotionally vulnerable, seeking comfort and trying to get your life back to a normal state.
By the way, for those of you in Phoenix or in the state of Arizona who are listening right now, that was just a scene that I was playing. Duffy is fine. She's perfectly healthy. And we're very happy going into our 36th year. Let's talk about practices.
Oh, wait a minute. I just want to have one more thing on the last segment. If you have adult children, one of the things that may come up If a person, one of the parents, decides to start going out and having some friendships with other women, the children, even though they're grown adults with their own families, are often not as ready as soon as the parent is. And that's another touchy thing, because they're trying to get used to seeing that parent with someone different. And they're not understanding the needs of the parent. They're just thinking from their own point of view, like, gee, I don't want someone to replace my mom. So I also, you know, help people to have, you know, discussions with their loved ones and try to understand where the kids are coming from, too, when they really push back.
What if I say something gentle and kind and sweet to the kids, like, mind your own damn business?
Well, they probably won't like that.
But that's how I feel sometimes. I mean, that's how I would feel.
Right.
With people intruding into my personal decisions that are deeply, deeply personal.
Right, and that's why bereavement counselors such as myself help you to to say, acknowledge with that the kids may be feeling uncomfortable, but you know, son, it's my life. And I'm going to take it slow, and I'm, you know, consulting with some professionals, and I hope that you're going to be okay with it.
Well, if they find out that I'm talking to D-Unks on a regular basis, I'm sure they'll have no concern whatsoever. What about traditions? That's one of those things that seems to be a puzzlement to a lot of people, including me, even though I haven't been in the position before. I see others who are attempting to either carry on traditions during the holidays and do everything exactly the same way that they did when they had a spouse or when the child was still there or when the grandpa was still there and a part of the family. They want to continue on exactly as if everything was the same, but it isn't.
Right.
What about those traditions?
Well, I think this is one of the things we address as Hospice of the Valley counselors during our holiday bereavement groups. And that is that there are going to be differences among families as to who wants to keep the traditions exactly the way they are and who, what family members say, you know what, I just can't do it. There's just too many grief triggers for me if we do the same thing we always do. I'm just not ready this year. So one of the things we suggest is to just talk about it as a family. But, for instance, in your example of having a spouse die, the spouse may say, you know, I just can't do it the same way this year. And this is what I'm willing to do, and this is what I'm not willing to do. And then the children will decide what they're willing to do. But in our materials, we say there's really no rules to it. We just need to get through the event as best we can. So sometimes it means kind of keeping things the same, and sometimes it's going to mean I don't want to do this. When I was first starting, I had a client whose husband died very young, and they had a 10-year-old. And the first Christmas, she and the child decided to go to Disneyland, and the family about had a fit. I mean, they had a conniption about it. How can you go away to Disneyland, and this is our tradition, and we always get together as a family? And she had to be strong and say, you know what? This is what the two of us have to do to get through this Christmas without him.
Mm.
And so they went.
But you just prefaced that with a phrase that seems to be marvelously important. She had to be strong.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that strength come from?
Well, I think it comes from just following your heart. Everyone has that small voice inside of us that kind of tells us if something doesn't feel right. And when we're being pushed to do something, it just isn't right for us. Usually we have some signs, either physical or emotional or thoughts. And it's like, wait a minute, slow down. Something doesn't feel right. What do you really want to do? And we tell people, you know, every year it's a new year. So this Christmas you might not want to keep the traditions, but next Christmas we can revisit it. And maybe we'll go back to it. So it's not just cast in stone forever.
Okay, Dee, listen, you counsel on a daily basis. For how long? How long have you been a bereavement counselor?
I've been a bereavement counselor like 20 years.
So you probably have pretty much seen it all. And if not all, then pretty close. What does one say when a well-meaning, benevolent member of the family says, I'm coming over for Christmas dinner, and I'm bringing the child's chair that child used to use, the high chair, used to use when that child would come and visit us. And it's a very, very special furniture example of my love. It's a tangible example of how devoted I was to this child, and still am, and I want that high chair to be at the table. You're the parent, and you can't think of anything more heartbreaking. What do you say?
Well, I'd first of all say I need to think about this before you bring the chair, because this is really a big thing for me. I mean, I don't know if I can handle it. So I need some time to think about it. Would it be okay? I know this is important to you and you think it might be helpful, but I don't know if I can get through the day seeing the empty chair. And hopefully you'll understand that I may not be able to do it.
That may hurt Grandma and Grandpa terribly.
And I want to acknowledge that this may hurt you terribly because this is important to you. So maybe we could do something with the chair at your home. Maybe we can think about what else we can do to honor, you know, the baby in the chair. But let's do it at your home, because bringing it to my home might just be way too much for me. Would that be okay?
Do you have a general attitude about keeping things, keeping a room the way it was, whether it's a teenager or an adult or a child, keeping souvenirs, keeping collections of things the way they were? When do you move those things out and put them in storage? Or don't you ever?
Well, I have many clients that want to keep things just the same for quite a while. I mean, I don't put a time frame on it. Sometimes it's months. Sometimes it's a year. I had one lady that her husband of 60 years died, and she couldn't move any of his clothing. And as we were coming past the one-year anniversary of his death, Hurricane Katrina happened. And she heard on the radio they were collecting clothing for Hurricane Katrina. And she thought, I think I'm ready to donate his clothing. So she called the number on the TV, and this wonderful gentleman came with a truck, and he came and packed up all of her husband's clothing, and then he lifted her up to the truck so she could see where it was marked, and he told her she was his last stop. It was going to go right to New Orleans. And she felt it was just the right thing. It was just came to her, but it was a year after he had died. Sometimes if people can't for a long period of time change anything, then it'd be good to come to talk to a grief counselor or someone they trust to say, what's getting in the way of that? What is keeping me from keeping some things but changing some things? Because changes are a very big aspect of grief and getting through grief, and it's very difficult to change. So sometimes we're reluctant. And sometimes we let things happen that we don't have control over, so we just have to accept the changes. And sometimes we have to be intentional and say, I'm ready to make a change now.
And in comes the rest of the family again. Mm-hmm. Mom, those are Dad's clothing. That's Dad's suit that he loved so much.
Mm-hmm.
That's my favorite hat that he used to wear all the time for the ball games. How can you possibly give that to somebody that's a total stranger?
And what I want you to know is, if there's anything of Dad's that you want, I'd like you to tell me and take it now, because I'm ready to start to move some things out of the house. And I do think that we should offer that to intention, you know, to our family members. And sometimes people give it to friends. I mean, I had one gentleman. His wife had a wonderful clothing, you know, it was designer stuff, and she had a wonderful small group of women friends that came and helped take care of her. And so after she died, when he started feeling several months later that he was able to get rid of some of her things, he invited her good girlfriends over and said, I'm ready to get rid of some of her things. Is there anything you want before? And then, is there any charity you think I should give it to? And it became this wonderful sharing experience, and it helped him to do it too. And then also, Pat, I think it's important to maybe keep a few things just for yourself in your own special area of treasures that you have of your loved one that you're not going to give to anyone, and maybe this until you're gone, and then it will go on. And it's kind of like for part of the family memory. This is their legacy to the family for future generations.
Dee, it sounds to me as if there aren't any strict rules. Is that right?
That's right.
And is that something that we should share with the rest of the family?
I think that that's the main theme, is that everyone grieves in their own unique way, and there's no rule book. There's no rule book of how long to wear your wedding ring. There's no rule book about how when to start moving belongings. There's no rule book of when to start re-engaging into your former activities or maybe start new ones. And that's what we need to encourage families, is to say, you know, everyone's going to do this the best way they can.
So Mom just passed away in September. And my God, here it is, December. Does that mean I have to do Christmas presents and I have to do all the holiday things and I have to accept at least a few of the invitations that have come in from people who want to put their arms around me and show me their grief? I don't want to do any of it. I don't want to be a part of Christmas. And boy, I know I'm going to get such grief. Except from Dee Unks, who's going to tell me what?
I'm going to tell you, I understand that. It's really hard to go through Christmas. And I don't want you to think about the things you should have to do to please others. I want you to think about what you can do with the limited energy you have that would be helpful to you. And those family and friends that really love you will give you that space. And if they don't, then there'll be new people coming into your life that understand, that will give you that space and acknowledgement.
Well, my family really loves me, but they're grieving in their own way. And part of it is that they're rigidly thinking about the way things ought to be, according to the book of that person, not me. I don't want to make enemies of any of them, but they've clearly said they're expecting certain behavior patterns of mine.
Right, and I would say, I'm sorry I'm not going to meet your expectations this year. I'm going to do my best to participate as much as I can, or to just not complain and be a burden to anyone else. If I really feel I can't get in the spirit, I may just prefer to stay at home.
Does that include not coming to Christmas dinner the first year?
Well, you know, if it's really going to be difficult and there are a lot of people that I don't know, I mean, it's really hard to be around a lot of people sometimes during the holidays because it's so festive and there's a lot of chit-chat and you're not really interested or engaged in that. But I might come for a short while, and then I want you to know, if I excuse myself, don't come chasing after me to say, are you okay, are you okay? Just know that I'm separating myself either in the back room or out in the patio or just driving home because I need to have some time by myself to grieve.
A few minutes ago, Dee, we were just talking about the person who says, how long before I begin accepting social invitations and maybe dating or seeing another person socially? And the other end of it, and this is the one that just would be a dread for me. This would be a nightmare for me. People fixing you up.
Mm-hmm.
Not those who are attempting to tell you that you want to date too early. It's when you don't want to date at all. Or you're perfectly happy going to a movie or to dinner by yourself or with a family member, but there's no social thing going on. And people start telling you there's something wrong with you and that you've got to start seeing somebody.
Well, again, I think people are well-intentioned because they don't want you to be alone. That's their motivation. They're afraid that if you're alone, you're lonely.
And they also have a cousin about your age.
Yes, that you've never met or laid eyes on for 35 years.
No, please, Dee, there are thousands upon thousands of people who are saying, this is the one I've been waiting for. Dee, answer me. How do I gently say, don't fix me up? No, I don't want to go online. I'm perfectly happy with me.
I think you got it just right the way you said it. I like the fact that you're just direct about it and you say, I'm doing okay on my own. Now, let's say your loving friend says, I don't think you're doing so good on your own. That's why I'm suggesting this. I mean, you're like a little hermit over there. And we just know that you're pining away living in the past. You know, we want to help you get out in the world again. You're a social guy. You're fun. Da, da, da.
Go away.
And you have to say, I'm not ready yet, damn it.
Oops. Get out of my life. Oh, the idea of people, even without a loss, even without any loss of another human being, and maybe there's a divorce, or maybe there's just a breakup of a relationship, and instantly it's, hey, we know the right person for you.
I hear you, and I've actually had some experiences with adult children who lost their parent, and the parent wanted them to have somebody in their life. And so the parent is saying, I don't want you to be alone the rest of your life. You got to get out there and meet somebody. And then other family members are really trying to facilitate that. Yeah, they care about us, but they, on their timetable, their mind, they're thinking, this would be good.
Well, when it comes to grieving, it seems we blow it a lot, don't we?
Well, I think everybody thinks they're an expert on it. And there's 1,000 books in the market about it, you know. Everybody writes their own experience. But like we say in the grief groups, you know, we have a lot of things that are similar and common, but this is your own personal grief. So whatever people share in this group, it's their own experience. If you think it's going to be helpful, you can, you know, take it in and say, this would be great. But if it's not, just let it go and discard it. So one of the nice things that say to your friends is, you know, that really wasn't real helpful, what you just said now, because we're all in a learning process.
Oh, I'm just thinking, wow, that would certainly discourage somebody from coming up with yet another idea.
Right.
you continue to say we have to be candid.
Yes.
And honest about it without hurting people's feelings.
Right.
But you're going to hurt people's feelings anyway.
Well, it depends. I mean, sometimes they feel a little awkward. If you say it gently with kindness, like, you know, I appreciate all your suggestions, but they're not helpful right now. I'm not in the same space, but I know you care about me. So I'll give you the high sign when I'm ready.
I'll give you the high sign when I'm ready. Which then leaves me with the responsibility of letting people know.
Right, and also the autonomy, the choice, the everything that people want.
Here's one. I know someone who lost a spouse, and it was a loving relationship. And a friend of the family's, friend of both people in the couple, brought over a casserole one day. Instead of saying, what can I do?
Mm-hmm.
Just came over with some food and said, listen, I hope that this will get you through the weekend. And if you want to wait on it, freeze it, it'll be fine, right? I mean, no responsibility at all. And my friend said, that was one of the best gifts and one of the best casseroles I've ever had in my life. I loved it and finished it in a day and a half. The next weekend, another casserole. And then another casserole. Have you ever run into one of those?
Yes, I know where you're going with this.
Well, you tell me where to go.
Well, I mean, at some point, we're going to have to say, you know, I'm really grateful for the casseroles, but I think I'm ready to start, you know, trying to cook or do something on my own now. And I'm not really eating. I'm not eating that much. Or maybe we can go out to get something to eat together in a nice way to convey the fact that the casserole is generous, but it's you've passed the point of needing casseroles. Which, by the way, eating alone for one, cooking for one is really hard. So most people do want to bring food, but one of the things that most people in grief experience is that they don't eat as much. So let's say I bring you a casserole, that may last you a whole week and a half, that same casserole. And I think it's going to just get two meals out of it. I remember after my mother died, and after my dad died, I was taking food over to my mother, and I thought it was one portion. you know, I'd go back the next day, and she's like, oh, I still have some of that. I can get three meals out of that. So I had to really scale it down and realize she just didn't have the appetite that she used to have.
How long were they married?
They were married 50-some years.
How did she do?
She, the first year of her life, she really didn't do a whole lot. She just went to church. She wore black. And occasionally she'd put color on, which was a white blouse under her black suit.
Real traditional Mediterranean family.
That's right. And I want to mention something about traditions. There's many cultures that have different grief traditions. And, you know, we honor that, too, as a bereavement counselor. I know what my family's traditions are, but other people, some people, you know, mourn a long time and wear the dark colors just because it's a symbol that, hey, I'm not quite myself yet. I'm not ready to really engage fully. But one of the things that came up in our experience was my brother would call my mother and, you know, tell her, if, you know, let's go out to dinner, or let's do this or that, and she'd forget. And so he called me one day and says, I don't know what's wrong with Mom. She forgets everything. And I said, it's one of the first symptoms of grief is forgetfulness.
Mm.
And people have to remember that we're not focused completely on the day-to-day things, on the conversations, on reading. We're not fully focused. So our powers of concentration and remembering and making decisions and actually accomplishing tasks, that all changes. And it's not like it's difficult to do those things.
Here's one of those things that comes out of the practical nature of a relationship rather than an emotional one. D, I never handled any of the business involvements in our family. I'm not a stupid person. I received all kinds of honors in school, but my spouse did it better and had all of the documents and all of those things were taken care of. I didn't really have any need to participate. And now I don't have any idea where to begin.
And that's very common because in a marriage, each of you have your strengths and your roles. And it's just easy to fall into those and you don't have to worry about what your spouse takes care of because that's what they do and that's what they enjoy doing or what their expertise is, just like they don't worry about what you do. So when one of you is gone, now you have to take on those extra responsibilities, and it's a whole new learning curve at a time when you really don't feel like you're up mentally and to doing the task. So it's going to take a lot of, and sometimes we say you might not do it the same way that they do it. You can devise your own way, but meanwhile, is there anyone that can help you? And give yourself time. Be gentle with yourself. Give yourself time to learn these things that your spouse used to take care of. I had a gentleman in our grief group. He's 90. In his 90s, he said, you know what? I don't cook. I don't do laundry. I don't do things around the house. My wife took care of all that. She's gone. I never thought I'd need to do this stuff. And so part of him is learning how to do it, and he has a grandson that prepares meals for him and freezes them in small containers. And so he's reaching out to get some help for it. But there's always things that we never learned because our spouse handled it.
I don't mean for this to sound spooky, but I know that it exists in a surprising number of families. So someone comes to you, Dee, and says, you know, you have really helped me a great deal in the grief process. And I want to confess something to you. Virtually every night, my spouse comes into the bedroom and kisses me goodnight. And I know that he or she is actually there as a spirit, really existing in my life. Now, you can call that spirit a ghost if you want to, but is it unhealthy for me to believe that my spouse is still around?
My question to you would be, does it bring you comfort? And if it does, then look at it as a blessing, that this is a special blessing you have, and it's beautiful.
I think my inclination would be to say, honey, I'm glad you're here. Where did you put the bonds? I can't find them anywhere.
And, you know, it's good to have those conversations, Pat. We do it, you know, just a normal conversation. And many of my clients say they talk to their loved ones every day. And having those conversations out loud is perfectly fine. It's not abnormal.
Before we leave, what about the conversation we have with somebody who means well once again and just left the mortuary, the funeral part of the church, and sees you now for the first time single and says, what can I do to help?
I just want you to be available for me if I just need you to come over and sit with me. It's nothing that you say that is as helpful other than just your presence. And that's the most helpful thing. And if I need something like help around the house or something, it's good to know I can call upon you.
The Unks, you're all over the valley. You're having meetings and gatherings, helping people in different parts of the greater Phoenix area.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Tell us one.
Well, we have a couple of specialty groups coming up in our senior centers in Scottsdale, one at the Via Linda Senior Center on December 18th for an hour from 10 to 11, and one to the Granite Reef Senior Center on December 17th.
And if I don't live in Phoenix, what then?
If you don't live in Phoenix,
if I live in Terre Haute, Indiana, or Rock Island, Illinois.
Right. Well, then I suggest you contact your local hospice and ask them what they have for grief support. And also, many mortuaries have grief support groups. So also, that's another place, churches, mortuaries, or hospices do.
And listen, you just walk in or call them and say, Dee Unk sent me. I met her on The God Show. And the Star, Worldwide Networks.